How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, February 21st, 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. And because it's Friday, that means it's Security Friday. So with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Glad to have you with me. Now, we want to start with a little PSA. And that PSA is that we've had a report of another data breach. Not that it is happening right now. It happened last year, but we're only hearing about it now, correct?
Yes. So this report is from TechCrunch. This data breach happened between May and July 2019. It is a government agency. It's part of the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. It's called Defense Information Systems Agency. So they're starting to give letters to people who were affected. Some of the information they say were part of the breach were social security numbers. So that's definitely not good.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And I don't know anything else. It just says social security numbers and other sensitive information. So that could be phone numbers, maybe addresses, emails. I don't know. But the DISA has about 8,000 staff and contractors. So that's not a small breach. I mean, it is, but compared to other ones, but there's still any data breach is significant.
It is. And, you know, that's also sort of what it means, right? Because if somebody gets access to your phone number, for example, it's also possible maybe they can get access to your contacts, things like that. So there can be a lot of waves of this that sort of spread around. So that's always interesting. So data breaches are still a thing that's happening. And I think, like, you know, the frequency of this is only going to go up. So be careful who you're giving your data to and be careful what data you're giving them for a bunch of reasons. You know, we've talked about it before. You know, they're not going to call you and say, this 24 characters of gibberish you gave me is your mother's maiden name. We know that's not true. Like, no one's going to do that. So, you know, don't worry about giving accurate answers to security questions and that kind of stuff. So the next thing that we want to talk about is encryption, because a lot of people are mentioning encryption, but they're not really going into detail about it.
Yeah, so two phrases I see come across all the time when a company wants to mention that they do use encryption. They use phrases like bank level security or military grade encryption, and which is good for most people, but it's not really a lot of information for people who actually want to know what type of encryption they're using.
Right.
And so bank level security, I've found, is usually referred to AES 128. Okay. And then military grade encryption is usually AES 256.
Okay.
And so what AES is, Advanced Encryption Standard, it was established by the National Institute of Standards and Technology back in 2001. It uses a symmetric key algorithm, which means it uses the same key for encrypting and decrypting data. Data is encrypted in 128-bit blocks, while the key can have three sizes, 128, 192, and 256. Mm-hmm. Although I personally don't really see a 192 that often. It's just either 128 or 256.
Yeah.
And so another thing I wrote in my article was, well, which is more secure, 128 or 256? Well, I mean, if the keys are bigger for 256, that would obviously make it a bit more secure, but that doesn't mean that AES 128 is a slouch. I mean, that is what Apple uses for encrypting data in iCloud. At least they use a minimum of that on their website. They say, yeah, we use a minimum of AES 128. And so they could be using 256, possibly for end-to-end encryption. And so just to put it in perspective, 128-bit key is very long. So to go into the math a little bit, that means 2 to the power of 128 or 340 followed by 36 zeros. So this is a very, very big number.
And that's and that the just, small encryption, the 128 encryption.
Yeah. Yeah. And that mean and that just means that is the possible number of keys that are available.
Mm-hmm.
And so 256 would double that.
Yeah. And that's way more zeros than I can realistically wrap my head around. So, yeah, which is kind of where I want to be personally. Like, if I cannot fathom the number of combinations that are possible for somebody to try to crack my password, like, that's why my Facebook password is 50 characters of gibberish. Because A, I don't ever have to remember it. I just let my password manager do it for me. B, I know nobody's going to be able to brute force their way in because it's super duper random. And there's punctuation and there's other special characters and, you know, upper and lowercase letters and all of that. So... nobody's going to be able to get in and start like offering people free PlayStations or whatever it is that people do with fake Facebook accounts now. So
yeah,
like being able to not even wrap my head around the number of combinations that would be possible if I were using that encryption actually makes me happy.
Yeah. And at the end of this article, I did want to point out that while even if 256 is more secure, it all depends on how the company implements it. Because like yes. I pointed out, you can have the most secure encryption in the world, but if you don't use it right, anyone can break into it. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I said, well, this is why open source software is good, because then you can see how the company is using the encryption and other code that they have.
Yeah. And that's also important. There are occasionally companies that come out and say like, yeah, we keep all your software safe, but... or all your information safe and, you know, we're encrypted, but what they're not telling you is that there are servers, you know, their firewall security is crap and there's no passwords on any servers inside. So no. Somebody can get in and walk around and, you know, maybe your password's encrypted, but maybe the rest of your stuff isn't. So you kind of have to read those things a little more carefully. So that's, you know, that's another piece of it is making sure that everything they're doing is correct. And honestly, like, given the number of horror stories that I hear about financial institutions, when somebody says they have bank level security, I sort of roll my eyes because there are still some that are like, your password can't be more than 8 characters. What's wrong with you? You know?
Yeah.
So,
or even military grade encryption, because I don't know this personally, but I've heard that some government institutions are probably still running Windows XP. I mean, we just
talked about
a data breach in the Department of Defense. So There you have it.
Yeah. So pay attention to that stuff. And, you know, again, make sure you're not giving information to people who don't need it. You know, if that field is optional, don't give them your birthday or your shipping address or whatever. You know, store that stuff in iCloud Keychain or something and let it fill it in and don't save it. It's just a couple of taps to put it in and then you don't have to worry about somebody getting a hold of it if they aren't supposed to have it. The last thing we want to talk about today is sort of folded in with a tip. And that is because I think, you know, again, thank you for bringing this up, Andrew, this week on Mac Observer, because I don't feel like enough people know this or completely understand it sometimes. Because I've said this to enough people who were completely shocked that I feel like we should talk about it a little bit more. And that is your DNS servers.
Yes. So I did a roundup of 4 private DNS services that I personally think are good and recommend.
Mm-hmm.
So just a quick primer. DNS, it stands for Domain Name System, and it basically helps your web browser talk to all the web servers. Like, it's commonly called the phone book of the internet.
Yeah.
And it means that you can, if you want to go to the Mac Observer, for example, you can type in Mac Observer instead of 104.26.0.124.
Right.
It resolves those names. It resolves those numbers into the human readable name.
Mm-hmm. That's why, like, if you look at your web browser, when you type in a web address in the address bar and you hit return, if your connection is a little pokey, sometimes you'll see your browser say looking up MacObserver.com or something like that, and it's because it's trying to go to the DNS server and get the DNS server to say, okay, you want Mac Observer, so I'm going to give you 192.168.0.1, and here you go. That's just an IP address I know off the top of my head. So that sometimes is where you get hung up, or where you find out that you can't get anywhere on the internet, is because all of a sudden your browser just keeps looking up and can never actually get a response back from anything. That's usually an indicator that your network is down.
Yeah, so that's what DNS is, and here's why you should change it, because when you use an ISP, any ISP, they all have their own DNS servers, but as we've been finding out the past several years, most, if not all of them, are also using that DNS to see what you're doing on the web, collect all your browsing history, and then turn around and sell it to advertisers. And that's not like an allegedly that they're doing. Another thing I wrote up, I think it might have been this week, where in Maine, they want to create a privacy bill, and they want to make ISPs get customer consent before they sell their data. Uh-huh. And of course, they don't like that. They're saying that infringes on our free speech rights. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole nother battle.
Yeah, that one, that's a special one too, because this is, and part of the reason that I find this one sort of insulting is because, as we keep telling you on Fridays, if you are not paying, you are not the customer. But in this case, you are paying, and still somehow you're not the customer. And that's the reason that I find this one particularly aggravating, because I've mentioned to people, like, you're not using, you know, whatever your ISP gave you for your DNS, are you? Why not? Well, because they're taking those, all that web history that they have from you using their DNS servers. Every time you do that, they're recording that entry and they're selling that data to other people. And what? Yeah. Like, almost every time something like this comes up in conversation and I mention it, it turns out to be like mind blowing for the person that I'm speaking to. And that person could be a very tech-savvy person or not a very tech-savvy person, and it doesn't matter. This is definitely a thing that doesn't get enough discussion. So tell us a little bit about what these other services do, because they're very easy to use, right? This isn't something like a VPN where you have to make sure you have an app installed and that you're turning something on when you're not home, or, you know, when you're not on your home network, anything like that. This is a very easy switch to make, right?
Well, I mentioned that too. You do, in some cases, it is helpful to install an app, especially on your iPad or iPhone, because you can go into settings, and I talk you through this in the article. You can go into settings and, like, manually type in these DNS servers, but you have to do that for each network you connect to, and there's no way to do that over cellular. And so what these apps do, they install a fake VPN profile, and it's fake because they're not routing your traffic through one of their servers. It's just kind of routing it through itself. It uses the 127.001, which is home, if anyone knows that. So I do recommend on iOS devices to download an app.
Okay.
And so the services that I recommend, the first one is Cloudflare. Cloudflare is probably one of the biggest networking companies around.
Yeah.
I found that their DNS server is pretty basic. It's 1.1.1.1. They say they don't log your traffic. And because they are involved with so many websites when it comes to, you know, networking, it probably will speed up your traffic a little bit, but that's
probably true.
That's all you can really do with it.
Yeah.
And so another one I've used is called AdGuard. Now, AdGuard, they have an ad blocker, but they also have DNS servers that you can use.
Okay.
Now, this one, they have a couple of different types of servers. They have a regular one, which can block ads, malicious websites, tracking, phishing, all that kind of stuff. And they also have what they call a family protection server, which gives you adult content filtering. If you have kids, that's a good service to use. The third one is DNS Warden. It's not really as well known as all these other ones, but it does give you the same sort of features. They have three different servers, an ad blocking one, a family protection one, and an uncensored one, which means it doesn't sound like it really does anything for you. But if you don't want them filtering out anything and you just want to do things yourself, I guess that's the server to use.
Okay.
And so the final one, this is one that I'm currently using, and I've only been using it for about a week, but I really, really like it. Okay. So It's called NextDNS. And in my opinion, it's better than all of these others, services, just because you can customize it a lot more. If there are any people out there who know what Pi-hole is,
yeah,
it's kind of like that, except Ooh. You don't really need to download anything. It's your sort of dashboard that you manage is all in your browser.
Okay. So for people who don't know, let's just derail for a second. Pi-hole is sort of an ad blocking service that works sort of up a level from your devices. So it's called Pi-hole because most of the time you run it on a Raspberry Pi that just hangs out on your network. And what it does is it blocks all of these ad network things. So you don't have to install anything on your phone or on your iPad or on your computer. You set up Pi-hole, it hangs out on your network and it routes all that stuff away for you. And so then anything that's connected to your Wi-Fi isn't getting all that junk. That's pretty much how it works. Yes, it's available for other things, but primarily it started out as here's a little thing that you can use on that cute little Raspberry Pi that you've got on your network, and here's a way that you can make it useful.
Yeah. And so with this, like I said, you don't even really need a Raspberry Pi for this. It's just browser-based. And so, I like it. You can customize it. For example, there are plenty of block lists that you can add and remove at any time. One block list I found that was particularly interesting, it says it can block any known servers owned by the NSA, the CIA, or the FBI.
Interesting.
And they have a list of those servers too. I'm sure it was probably something maybe leaked in WikiLeaks, or maybe when Edward Snowden did that whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking that's probably where they got this data.
It does say known, so that doesn't mean they can't track you. It just means they can't track you with these machines. Yeah. Okay, and what do these cost?
So this is, all of these are free.
Okay.
With NextDNS, it sounds like they're in a beta phase. So their webpage does say it's free for the beta. After the beta is done, I don't know when that will be. Mm-hmm. They'll limit you to, I think, 300,000 DNS queries. And then after that, it'll be $2 a month.
Okay.
And which is amazing to me, only $2 a month.
Yeah.
So this is something I will happily pay for.
Yeah, I will gladly give them my money instead of my information. That seems like a very fair trade. I would much rather hand you $2 than all of my browsing history. Yeah, let's make that a reality. And then, okay, so that one you said is in beta, but the rest are free.
Yeah.
So, all right. Now, I really like all of this because, like I said, it doesn't seem like a lot of people have a lot of awareness of this, so... Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Andrew. That's going to do it for Security Friday for today. There's our pro tip. If you have a security issue that you'd like us to dig into a little bit and maybe explain, if for no other reason, then we can break it down. And then when people ask you about it, you can just send them to that episode of the show. Let us know. And if you have any feedback about the topics we've discussed so far on Security Friday, you can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. Andrew, thank you so much for coming by today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, as always.
Glad to have you with me. And a little bit of housekeeping for everybody. I'm not going to be around next week, so we will not be recording these live. You will have some interesting interviews with some people and a couple of more topical shows next week. So I will be talking to you, just not quite real time like I do now. I hope all of you have an awesome weekend. And until I talk to you again, be excellent. excellent to each other.